number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, we know the top two picks tonight in the NFL draft will go quarterback. Carson Wentz or Jared Goff, flip them around. It doesn't matter. And frankly, I don't even care. I don't have a leader in the clubhouse. If the Rams like Wentz, great. If they like Goff, great. My question in this draft coming up, and I got a lot of them, is where does Paxton Lynch go? And is this stuff that I've been reading and hearing about Connor Cook of Michigan State, are these praises that I've been getting over the last couple of days enough to propel him in round number two? He claims there are a number of teams that like him, including the Denver Broncos. But the Broncos already seem to be interested in getting Sam Bradford off the Eagles' hands if that is in play. Connor Cook is interesting to me because, again, this is what happens almost all the time in the draft is you spend weeks and weeks and weeks in the early part. Everyone goes to the Senior Bowl and everybody's kind of getting an idea, an early idea. And then you start noticing, okay, there's some pro days and then there's interviews and then there's the combine and all that other stuff. And then you start putting all of that together and you say, okay, based on what we know so far, these are the players you want to consider for round one. And this guy is around three. This guy's around four. This guy's around five. This guy's around two. And Connor Cook was a round two guy. Even Connor Cook believes he's a round two guy, but John Gruden really likes him. And, well, that's not a surprise. John Gruden liked Manziel. But John Gruden really likes him. And now there's this buzz. But I caution people on this. I'm not saying Connor Cook is not going in the first round. He might. I don't know what teams late in the draft think or how they evaluate. He might. I'm going to keep that possibility open. I wouldn't be shocked, but I would be like, wow, if he does. But here's the thing. Remember this. A lot of times with this draft analysis stuff, there are so many people that do this as part of a living or as they're living. And how do you become a draft guru on a network? What separates you from all the other draft gurus on a network? Well, sometimes you make bold statements and sometimes you make bold claims and you just hope they pan out based on a couple of sources. So let's say you are a draft guru and your job is, hey, evaluate these players, watch some tape, write down what you know, and give us people to look out for in the first round. Okay, take a Connor Cook, or it could be anybody for that matter, a kind of a bigger name guy. He's on the bubble. He could go late in the first round or in the second round. Well, if you put him in the second round with everybody else, how are you separating yourself from the pack? But you can honestly claim that, yeah, based on my evaluation and what I'm hearing around the league, this guy's got a potential late first round ability. And then if it pans out, if it works out, that's what you hang your hat on. So this is the kind of stuff that you got to kind of watch out for. Because again, there's a lot of these guys that do this for a living. And some of them realize I've got to make a move somewhere. I've got to separate myself from the pack. And that's where a lot of this Connor Cook buzz could be. There's also another factor to consider. And that other factor is, hey, quarterbacks are just kind of needed. Future quarterbacks are needed. And if he's got some skills and he can play and he's going to go early in the second round, well, maybe a Denver Bronco team's like, okay, we didn't evaluate him in the first round, but to be honest with you, we kind of like him. And you know what? There's no crime in liking a guy and moving him up the board. So maybe that's the case too. But again, if that happens, that means there's four quarterbacks going to go in the first round of the NFL draft. And we've been talking about this for a long time. Quarterbacks, quarterbacks, quarterbacks. You got to have one. If you don't have one, you can't win. And no, the Denver Broncos don't count. That was catching a nice wave, but in the end, you need a guy.
Mike Mayock of NFL Network had Paxton Lynch going to the Jets.
At 20?
Yes, 20.
Okay. That's good. That's a good fall.
The other interesting thing he had at the top of the draft, he had four offensive players going 1-4. He had the two quarterbacks, Ronnie Stanley going 3, and Ezekiel Elliott going 4.
I think Ezekiel Elliott's going to the Cowboys. I really do. I think they're going to love Jalen Ramsey. I think in the end they pull the trigger on Ezekiel Elliott. But boy, Jalen Ramsey's he's going to be so hard to turn away.
the Jaguars will be jumping up
and
down.
Are you kidding me? If Ezekiel, the moment Goodell reads Elliott, Jaguars run to the podium to get the pick in. Run to the podium to get the pick in at five. That would make their day. Gus Bradley with him, and was Dante Fowler that's coming back, right? Yep. Dante Fowler coming back, right? And Malik Jackson,
yep.
Right? There. Gus Bradley's going to, and I like Gus Bradley, and those of you who know, I'm on the Gus Bradley's going to turn this around train. In fact, we've adopted Jacksonville as kind of the quasi-team this season. We really want them to do well because they're putting together a good team, and there's got to be a curse that's just hovering over the team because they have all of these top five picks, and they can't do anything with them. So I'm really hoping this is the year they kind of do something fun. But yeah, you're right. I think Jerry Jones, and again, we talked about this yesterday with KD Drummond, there is a room of Cowboy executives. It is Jerry Jones with two votes, and Stephen Jones has got one, and Jason Garrett's got one, and whatnot. But I think across the board, I think Ezekiel Elliott's going to win out of that room. I think they're going to say, you know what, we don't get to pick this high very often. And when we do, we wouldn't mind an offensive playmaker. You know, we got a great offensive line. We'd love to have a dynamic back that can run behind it and catch out of the backfield. And this could be really, really great for Romo. And I think that's where they're going. That's a hunch, but I think that's where they're going. So again, you watch Jacksonville run to the podium to get Jalen Ramsey. If that happens, and then we start playing the Paxton Lynch game, because if you're the Browns and you want a quarterback and you need other positions, but if you want a quarterback still, if you're thinking, we want to get Paxton Lynch, I don't think you have to get him at eight. I think you can move down. You can figure out something later and move down to get him. But if the Browns stay put, they'll probably just take something of a need that they have and whatnot. But Paxton Lynch could go to Cleveland, not at eight. I can't imagine. If the Browns are in love with Paxton Lynch and they want him, they're not getting him at eight. They'll move down to get him because they can.
What I've seen is I've seen the Titans moving to six if Tunsil falls.
Yeah, that can happen. They got a lot of playing room.
Yeah. And I'm just, the players that seem to be falling right now are Laremy Tunsil, because, you know, everybody had him as number one, and then he went to three, and now everybody's saying Ronnie Stanley's the pick in San Diego. So now he falls to six, maybe. But a lot of people think the Titans will jump back. And then Miles Jack, I've seen him as far as 14 to Oakland because of his knee drama.
Because of the new injury.
Going on.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun tonight. I think it's going to be a lot more. I think this one, when this is all said and done, there's going to be a lot more moving and shaking than we've had in years past. I think this could be really, really interesting. This could be really fun for that kind of thing if you like it. If you like deals and all that stuff, this could be one of those nights. 800-777-2907. And again, I don't have any inside information on Elliott going to the Cowboys. It's just a gut feeling. It's just this feeling I got. Jones is going to say, that's the guy I really love. I probably could really use Ramsey, but I really love Elliott, and that's where I'm going to take him. And that's what I'm going to do. That's where I see it with Dallas. But, you know, maybe cooler heads prevail. I don't know.
The other team that supposedly loves Elliott is the Miami Dolphins, who want to trade back into the top 10 to get him if he gets past Dallas.
See, and go back to the point. I've been hearing this a lot. All these teams are like, I want to move up, I want to move down. They fall in love with the player. They're trying to figure out which teams want. And the whole other thing is that teams have learned to really value picks, and teams want to stockpile on picks. You know, it's this whole idea of this is where we get young talent. This is where we get the building blocks. This is what we're going to do. And if you can afford to do it, some teams will be game for it. Look, I mean, in an age where superstars are what sexy superstars are what teams want, everybody in Nashville was genuinely happy that John Robinson got rid of that number one pick for just a boatload of picks that they got from the Rams. And even though Laremy Tunsil is not a guy you put on the season ticket book or put on a billboard, Titans fans didn't care. Titan fans saw tremendous value in picks, and that's what they want. And Browns fans, the same thing. The moment the Browns made that deal with the Eagles, the notion of, you know what, the Cleveland Browns did something really smart. They did something really smart. They had the number two pick, and they traded it, and they got a lot of picks in return. And guess what? Now they can really start building. Good for them. You know, they got some smart people in there now. That was the assessment. You know, and again, in a league where you kind of want to name, you kind of outside of quarterback, everybody is, you can get that, you can get the younger version of what you need in the draft. Quarterbacks, you really got to have one, and not a lot of guys in the draft are going to be superstars. But if you need a good offensive guard, you can find him in the third round. You need a good defensive lineman, you can find him in round two. So that's where teams are leaning. It could be a really, really busy night in the NFL draft. Coming up, why one superstar still has to answer that ridiculous question. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D taking you through the night here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us. Again, 800-777-2907. You want to get your thoughts in on the draft. If you want to ask a question, or you want to make a comment, or you want to think we're crazy, you can also hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. Number of ways to get the conversation going on the draft. But I find this next story, I find this a little charming, okay? I don't know what the better word for it. I find it a little charming. Jake Arrieta of the Chicago Cubs has been on a massive streak. He just came off a no-hitter. He's like, in his last 16 starts, he has an ERA of under one. All right, so when you get an athlete like this that has turned his career around to a point where no one saw it coming, right? When he first enters the league, it doesn't matter what sport it is, baseball, football, where they just start off and you're like, yeah, okay, this is a work in progress. And then all of a sudden they become not only a superstar, but they put up really kind of ungodly numbers. There is a natural reaction to people to wonder, is there some performance-enhancing drugs that are associated with this athlete? And Jake Arrieta is being asked these kind of questions. Now, here's why I find this story charming, because Stephen A. Smith took a shot at Jake Arrieta, who kind of laughed off the performance-enhancing drug question. And Stephen A. Smith said on Twitter that Arrieta shouldn't be laughing about questions surrounding his performance. And Arrieta said, laughing is exactly what I will do. You continue to do your thing, though. No one will undercut my hard work. Now, I find this charming because here's the problem that we're living in today. As a baseball fan base, we've been really burned by this. We've been really burned by performance-enhancing drugs. We've had number of our stars waving that finger or in front of Congress or demanding in front of the press or being outraged, right? Taking things to court over accusations of whether or not they use steroids. That's just the world we live in. But I like Arrieta's response because he is saying, look, I get tested 10 times a year. I put a lot of hard work into this. I eat plants and lean meat. You know, and we have to come to terms with, hey, testing's better. And sure, guys can circumvent sometimes, but testing is really good now. And they're hammering home on it. And the numbers aren't outrageous as they used to be. Nobody by the end of April has 15 home runs, right? We're not going that crazy anymore. But there's always going to be questions about this. And I think Arrieta should laugh this stuff off. I don't think this needs to be a serious thing every single time. And the reason I say that, because I know Stephen A. would disagree and say, no, steroids is an important part of the integrity of the game. Performance-enhancing drugs are an important part of the game. But if you laugh it off and you keep bringing up the fact that you're tested all the time and there's no evidence of this, you know what? It's going to make it a little easier to just handle this, because this comes in waves and it never stops. I've seen athletes go through this. And I think you have to have a little bit of levity here, because you're going to get asked this all the time as he continues success if he doesn't start making people realize, hey, there's nothing to this. There's no bottle of androstenedione that you're discovering in my locker. We're not faking tests. I get tested 10 times. Nothing. No proof. And they keep testing me, and they will keep testing me. So you can keep asking because I'm putting up these numbers, but I'm going to still tell you that that's ridiculous. But I don't blame anybody for being skeptical, because again, we've really been burned by it. I remember doing a show in Colorado Springs, and we were talking about at the time it was 2005, and it was during the congressional hearings. And remember who was on that panel? It was Kurt Schilling. It was Sammy Sosa. It was Rafael Palmeiro, right? Jose Canseco came by later. Roger Clemens, right? But Rafael Palmeiro was a little bit of an interest for us because Palmeiro was the one that pointed his finger and he was, you know, said that he didn't do it. And then Canseco had made the accusation that he was the steroid king, and he had shown guys on the Texas Rangers how to use it. Well, we went to baseballreference.com and we looked up Rafael Palmeiro's home run statistics. And sure enough, they were, you know, pedestrian. Okay, you know, nothing eye-opening. And then 1992 came, and that's when Canseco arrived at Texas. And then all of a sudden, it was like 46, 47. It was like these crazy numbers. And it all changed. The skew changed from 1992 on, right? So it made you wonder. But here was a guy who was willing to, in front of Congress. And I remember my co-host adamantly saying over and over again, well, it's one thing to lie to you media guys, but it's another thing to lie in front of Congress. And I just don't think he would lie in front of Congress. That's really serious. And, you know, you can't do that. It's against the law, and you could be charged with perjury. Lying to you is one thing. Lying to Congress, now you got to be really careful. And I said, well, some of these guys really have been careful.
I have never used steroids, period.
Yeah. Right? So naturally, what happens? Well, we find out later that it wasn't really accurate, and we get burned. So Jake Arrieta, he's good. You know, if he keeps getting asked this again, treat it like it's ridiculous. Treat it like the question's ridiculous. That's what you can do. Fans, you should take the evidence that's out there. And there is no evidence of this. This is a bona fide superstar that's clean, at least according to the testing. You can be cynical and all you want, but you know what? Sometimes you got to go, yeah. Because believe me, Major League Baseball really did want to clean this up. The new, you know, 50-game suspensions and all that stuff came from that. It came from pressure from Congress. I think that in the end, this is going to be something when we look back, we'll remember as a really bad time for baseball statistically and maybe for the sport, because it was kind of a, you know, just a wild, weird time. But I also think it was the moment that helped really clean the game up. And sometimes sports has to go through that. You know, don't misconstrue this. I mean this in all, I mean this with all the respect to all of the guys that have suffered concussions in the league. But there's going to come a day where people are going to say those guys really paved the way to make football as safe as it possibly can be. Those were the guys that really initiated better helmets. Those were the guys that really initiated better sideline doctors. Those were the guys that really initiated the medical care post-career. And sure, there was a generation of our fallen football heroes that suffered and still suffer to get future players, that kind of thing. But in the long run, that moment, that weird, dark moment for the NFL where concussions were a serious issue, it could lead to something really good down the line. I think this is where baseball is. And I'm not putting Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Rafael Palmeiro on the same level. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying here. But I'm saying that Major League Baseball had this really dark time. But the testing and the punishment of this kind of stuff is really a testament to them trying to get this out of the game. And I said, I will applaud you if you can do it. And it looks like they're doing it. But in the meantime, when you see a guy pitching 15 games with an ERA of under one, I'm sorry, if you've been around a while, this is just going to raise an eyebrow, okay? It was like with the Lance Armstrong. There was a point where I was like, okay, there's no other cyclers in the world that can compete with this guy. He really is an island in and of himself. There's no other cyclist on the planet that can give him a run for his money in this race in France. Not one. And that's when you start getting a little skeptical. Like, I kind of doubt that. There's always a yin to a yang. There's always a guy that can come up and challenge you. 800-777-2907 is the number. Coming up next, Eddie Galco is going to join us from Optimal Scouting and Sporting News. He covers the draft, and he's got a lot to say on this. And we're having him for you next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, we're previewing the NFL draft because we are just moments away from that, getting kickstarted on Thursday night. Eric Galco joins us from Sporting News and Optimum Scouting to help us break down the draft and some of the storylines that you'll see on Thursday night in Chicago. How are you, Eric?
I'm doing well.
All right, let's talk about the draft class overall, because there's going to be 25 guys that are going to be in attendance, all hoping to get on stage. When you looked at this draft class overall, is this a very good draft class? Is it okay? How do you grade them out?
Yeah, I think it's a very top-heavy class, first and foremost. We see, after the top two quarterbacks, as many as 8, 9 elite talents in this class, depending on which team you ask. And that's pretty unique, right? There's only usually 3 or 4 guys that are really special in this class. This one has 8 or 9 that we know of. Certainly, there's always late first round or even day 2, day 3 picks end up surprising. So we have a lot of guys that we think teams are excited about early on. So that's unique. And while it's not sexy, this class is deep at defensive tackle, at pass rusher, and on offensive line, especially offensive tackle early on and offensive guard in day 2 and 3. So I think at the least sexy positions, it's very, very deep. I think smart teams will draft a lot of offensive defensive linemen throughout this draft class, but really the top 10, 12 picks are really exciting for teams who want to add a top talent.
All right, let's talk about the quarterbacks, because this is where the draft is going to get defined in years down the road, how Jared Goff and Carson Wentz do in their NFL careers. Beggars can't be choosers, so if you need a quarterback, this is what you get. But are the teams, the Rams and the Eagles, are they getting top NFL stars here, the potential NFL stars?
You know, they could be. Certainly, anything's possible with quarterbacks. And really, quarterback development is almost more important than what the quarterback scouting report is. It's about having the tools in place, the team in place, the coaching in place to get the most out of these guys. And, you know, a lot of quarterbacks throughout the league and every draft process can be special in that situation. That all said, I'm not sure Jared Goff is set up for success in Los Angeles with just a running game, really no receivers in place, a lot of pressure on him, coming from an offense that hasn't really produced a lot of quality NFL quarterbacks, and he doesn't have great arm talent, and he's a bit slight and undersized. So all those reasons, I have real pause about Jared Goff being worth the first overall pick. Then Carson Wentz, you know, the issues of coming from a small school program isn't why I'm worried about him. It's more so what he wasn't asked to do there. I think his anticipation, his timing is going to be off when he goes from college up to the NFL level. It'll take some time. He'll get that in Philadelphia, but again, a lot of pressure already. He's causing issues by being the pick with Sam Bradford wanting out. Chase Daniel going to be there, but he'll probably be forced out at some point early on his rookie year. So I think both those guys enter situations that look good on paper, not necessarily great news for them moving forward. And I still think at the end of the day, Paxton Lynch will be the best quarterback in this draft class.
Eric, you watch college football differently than I do. I see players and I go, oh, he'll probably make a good pro, and you see more of the nuances of the player. Carson Wentz, I didn't get to see him much at North Dakota State, and I knew about him but didn't know a lot about him. But he could possibly be the number 2 overall pick in this draft. Is that surprising?
You know, it's surprising. I think for a lot of teams it was unexpected because, you know, the evaluation companies, NFL teams rely on Bledsoe and National to their preseason scouting, had him ranked as undrafted guy. So I think that's surprising, as in teams weren't expecting it either for him to be this top player. But it's the 6'5 size. It's the mobility that reminds of a Joe Flacco with a strong arm. It's the mental makeup of running an offense at North Dakota State. It's the winning ability. But I think in a lot of ways, and what really emphasized the Eagles moving up to secure him, is his off-the-field character. He's a guy who's very religious, who's very respected by his teammates, who's a hard worker, who loves to watch film. And those things are a sign of a quarterback worth developing and worth getting to. So is he worth number 2 overall pick? I don't think anyone really believes he's that. But he's a guy that Eagles feel, hey, we're not far away from being a playoff team. We can win now. But we've got a guy here that we feel that all the signs point to him being a franchise quarterback.
I got to ask this question because you brought up something interesting, and it's called coachability. Have you seen the way players prepare for the draft, especially at the quarterback position, the way they prepare for their interviews and the way they prepare in front of the NFL scouts? How much is the coachability angle emphasized to the scouts and to the general managers, especially with quarterbacks?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge part of the process. I think for quarterbacks in particular, it's less about are they coachable, because if you're not coachable as a quarterback, teams are going to see right through that and ask team people around and not let them in the first 4 or 5 rounds. I think for coachability in terms of just the want to, that's very true for a lot of players that go on day 2 and day 3 of the draft. The team feels they can get the most out of this guy or the best yet to come in terms of developing. That's a huge issue. But I think for quarterbacks, it's more about, do we feel the connection with this quarterback? Is this the guy we want to, you know, to quote, ride or die with as our franchise? You know, Howie Roseman and Doug Peterson for the Eagles and Les Snead and Jeff Fisher for the Rams are tied to these quarterbacks for their careers. If Carson Wentz ends up being a bust, Howie Roseman may not have a job anymore. And same for Les Snead and Jeff Fisher for Jared Goff. So I think that's why quarterback interviews are so much different, because it's more about job on the line as opposed to do we like this guy or not. And that's why quarterbacks always get pushed up the board. It's why quarterbacks were traded for 1-2 in this draft. That's why quarterbacks define franchises and ownership and things like that for their success.
Eric Galco joins us, Sporting News and Optimal Scouting, on the NFL Draft Thursday night in Chicago for round one. So now we got the age-old question, which is, when teams draft, do they draft need or best player available? And that question I want to ask about the San Diego Chargers, because now they're going to have the pick of everybody else in it, that from all the positions. They don't need a quarterback, so everything else is on the board for them. Do they go best player or do they go need? How do you see the Chargers picking at three?
Yeah, I'm laughing now because it's still, we're only about less than 24 hours away from the draft, and I had heard really since January and February that DeForest Buckner was the top player on their board. They felt he was the character guy they wanted in the locker room to help rebuild that defense moving forward. They felt he would complete their defensive front seven in a lot of ways and be a foundational piece. But as I make calls the last couple of days, Ronnie Stanley of Notre Dame, the offensive tackle, comes up. They're going to be Tunsil of Ole Miss. I actually sent out three texts before I came on today. One said Buckner, one said Tunsil, one said Stanley. A couple of people said they're not sure who they're taking yet either. So I think it's still up for grabs. I think Buckner's the best fit. I've heard that the longest. Based on late action, I've talked to people, I think it's going to be Stanley third overall. There's a real chance the Chargers trade out of that pick, maybe with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jaguars come up, get Jalen Ramsey, and the Chargers still get their guy, whoever that might be, at fifth overall. But, you know, the last three times, the first and second pick overall were traded. The third overall pick was also traded in that draft. So I think we could see that again on draft day. But the Chargers, even though they have their pick of the litter for what talent they want, it's still up for grabs on which player they actually desire.
What pick and what team interests you the most in the first round? Maybe they got a lot in play. Maybe there's rumors that they'll trade. Maybe they don't know. You know, they're so wide open. What pick in the least first couple of picks is really intriguing to you?
Yeah, I'll say two, if that's all right. I'll say the 49ers at seven and the Browns at eight. Because mostly, I'm not sure where Paxton Lynch goes on draft day. He's, again, my top quarterback. I know of three other teams who feel he's a top quarterback overall in this class. So I think there's a handful of teams that will look up to move to get him. But is seven the pick? I know Chip Kelly. I think if Chip Kelly was in charge, he might pick Paxton Lynch. But Trent Baalke's in charge of that front office. So I think Baalke might want to say, hey, you know what, we'll find a quarterback later. We'll build Kaepernick. We'll make it work and add talent to this draft class. But that's an option. The Cleveland Browns, I don't think, want Paxton Lynch at eight overall, but does the team move up to seven or eight to get Paxton Lynch? So I think seven, or I think regardless, the Cleveland Browns want to move down, want to add more draft picks. I think a lot of teams will want to go to that eight spot, whether it's Miles Jack, Ezekiel Elliott, Joey Bosa, Laremy Tunsil, Ronnie Stanley, whoever, one of those guys will fall to that pick at eight, and the Cleveland Browns will ask for a lot of draft picks in return. And on Cleveland for a second, they've moved down from two to eight. I think they don't want to just stockpile a ton of picks and just have 15, 16 draft picks. They want to have as many top 75 draft picks as possible. So we'll see them move down probably from eight to someplace else, but they'll use those fourth and fifth round picks they've accumulated and get back up to that top 100, top 75 overall.
Yeah, is Michigan State's Connor Cook, is he on the board for the first round? I heard that Denver may like him. Is he on the board for the first round?
Yeah, well, he's a good fit in Denver. The Cleveland Browns, I've been told, like him. I think the Browns' tie is primarily because they want a quarterback to kind of play behind Robert Griffin, be an NFL-ready guy. And we saw Hugh Jackson last year advocate for A.J. McCarron to be the draft pick, and they ended up picking him in the fifth round at Cincinnati. So now Hugh Jackson kind of gets a better version. You know, from my scouting report and doing a lot of work on Connor Cook and talking to his family members, talking to friends of his family members, teams in Michigan State, players there, there's a real bad vibe with Connor Cook being a franchise quarterback. And, you know, people ask about his leadership, the people who are standing up for him point to the wins and the big games. That doesn't mean much in the NFL. Every quarterback's going to have ups and downs, mostly downs more than ups, for the great ones even, when they start out. I'm not sure how teammates are going to react and feel when Connor Cook is struggling, because all quarterbacks are going to struggle. It's how your teammates pick you back up. It's why Blaine Gabbert, Joey Harrington, a lot of quarterback busts didn't work out. I don't think Connor Cook has the elite arm talent, the elite upside, or more importantly, the ability to lead a team as a quarterback to be worth a first-round pick. But that said, the Browns have interest. He's a great fit for the Broncos offense if they want a plug-and-play guy. And the Buffalo Bills are looking for a pro-ready starter as well.
Eric Galco again, Sporting News and Optimal Scouting on the NFL Draft Thursday night in Chicago. Appreciate it, Eric. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, coming up next, we'll digest some of those things he said, the expectations coming up on Thursday. And we say happy birthday to one of my favorite sports personalities, Yahoo Sports Radio. I am Tony D, taking you through the night.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue to look ahead to Thursday night's NFL draft, and we got you covered here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Like I said, we'll have an extended show for us. We'll be on a little earlier than normal, but we'll still take you through the overnight hours. But the draft in Chicago, the television show that it is, it should be good. Let's see. Oh, I just... The thing that I don't like, I like the draft, and I understand its importance, and I understand the TV show aspect of it, and I even enjoy it. The one thing I don't like, I really wish they wouldn't do it. I don't like the red carpet stuff. I just, you know, because you know, you're not getting really anything out of these guys. They're all happy to be there. They're about to be millionaires. They're not going to tell you that they want to go to a certain team, so don't ask that question. Which team do you hope they draft you? I don't know, Dallas, Phil, I don't know. I mean, if it's not the LA Rams, they pretty much don't care. They want to. Everyone wants to be the number one pick. They know they're not going to be, but at any point, they just want to be picked because nobody wants to be Brady Quinn. Remember that? Remember when Susie Colbert was doing the stand-up and she was like, the NFL has escorted Brady Quinn to the private suite of Roger Goodell because the cameras were on him like after every pick, and he was like, ugh. Chris Berman was like, there's Brady Quinn going unpicked again. And you're like, ugh. And they had to move him because the cameras are all over him. So nobody wants that. So they're all just happy to be there. But they're trying to turn it into a little bit more than it actually is. That I don't really dig. And I don't need like the big, long, five-hour pregame show. It's not the Academy Awards. I don't need to know what, you know, Jalen Ramsey is wearing. Just turn it in. Just have the draft. It's fun. Guys have a good time. I've never attended the draft. I'd like to. It's like a bucket list item for me. I'd like to cover a draft live just to see what it's like. I had a buddy of mine that went to the draft at Radio City Music Hall. Says you got to get there so early. It was when it was on Saturdays years and years ago. And he said, you got to get there really, really early. But he goes, it's great. It's like a party. It's like a celebration of the NFL. It's like when, you know, you know how like conferences, like companies will have conferences, you know, like of car dealerships or something like that. And everyone just goes to some big place like maybe Vegas, and everybody has a convention, and you're all from different parts of the country, but you're all kind of there for the same thing. Maybe it's computers, maybe it's whatever it is. And you're just having a good time in the city and talking shop. He says, that's what it was like at the NFL draft. It's like, you see fan bases from all around the country. He goes, but you're all there for the same reason, rooting for your team. Hopefully you'll get a feel good situation. You'll be like, all right, let's. But in the end, you're there just to celebrate what is the NFL. All right, 800-777-2907. Steven on Twitter, the Bengals are in the need of someone to help focus off AJ Green. What receiver in this draft do you see being able to do that? I think it's Corey Coleman. I hope the Bengals take Corey Coleman. That seems to be the consensus there.
Yeah, those three wide receivers, Coleman, Dotson, and Treadwell, are all going to go right in that 21 to 27 range.
And I think for the most part, those guys are pretty interchangeable. If you don't get Coleman, you can get Dotson. If you don't get him, you can get Treadwell.
Yeah.
I don't think you can nitpick, but that's just fine-tooth combing.
Right, it is.
It's just, you know, well, this guy runs a little bit faster. This guy has a little bit better hands. I don't think there's massive separation between those three. I think you'd be happy with any one of those three wide receivers in the draft. Steven, so good question.
So do you have a player you want your Steelers to get?
No, I don't really. I don't really know. Like I've kind of gone back and forth on this, but I don't really know. I kind of like to see them go a little bit in the secondary, mm-hmm. See where that goes. But that's kind of where I'm leaning. I haven't really figured it out. It's weird when your team makes the playoffs because it's like let me know who's available and then I'll be happy.
What pick do they have?
26, something like that. 20.
Somewhere in there.
26, 25. I'm not even sure because I'm just like when they're around, let me know.
Yeah.
Like whatever players are around, then I'll get excited. If I see a certain player falling that far, I go, oh, okay, hopefully they'll grab them. So, all right. So Thursday is the 50th birthday of one of my favorite sports personalities, and that is PGA Tour, now Champions Tour golfer, John Daly. I've loved John Daly since 1991 when he emerged on the scene. I was all in. I was young. I watched the PGA Championship that year, and I got caught up in the story like anybody else. For those of you who don't know John Daly's story, 1991, John Daly was a struggling golfer, and he wasn't making any cuts, and he was from Arkansas, and he just wasn't making it on tour. And Nick Price, his wife was having a baby before the PGA Championship. So he had to pull out of the tournament. And when they do that, they go to alternates, the guys who are, you know, kind of on call. Like if a guy doesn't show up or a guy gets hurt or withdraws, you go to the alternate. And John Daly was one of the alternates. And it was at Crooked Stick in Carmel, Indiana. And he had to drive to that tournament. He barely had time to take any practice rounds, but he did have Nick Price's caddy. And I think his name was Squeaky was his name. He had this really high-pitched voice. And John Daly with his 350-yard drives, I mean, he was a monster off the tee, but delicate, delicate soft hands with pitching and putting won the PGA Championship. And I won $20. I had a bet with a friend of mine. I won $20 that John Daly would hang on and win on Sunday. My friend said he will collapse on Sunday. He just because he was such an unknown quantity. He won the PGA Championship. And ever since then, his life was center stage because of the aw shucks, Arkansas, kind of the hillbilly golfer. He loved to drink. He loved to smoke. He was the golfer that a lot of us kind of saw growing up at a local private club. You go down to the local course, guys would be smoking, drinking, having fun, smacking around the golf ball. That was John Daly. He just happened to be a major championship winner. His life was a soap opera. Marriages, bad marriages, there were gambling. But all in all, he became a very lovable player and a very likable player on tour. Guys really loved John Daly, and they still love him. Despite all of his flaws and all of his sins, they love him. Happy birthday to one of the craziest roller coaster rides on the PGA Tour. I hope it continues, John. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.